Hey guys, it's Tom from the Tottenham Way here, back with our second summer special. Those of you who listened a couple of weeks ago to the first special will know that Dan is currently out in America covering Spurs for the pre-season tour out there. What he's done is put together a little podcast with a couple of the guys he's out there with, and that's going to be coming up shortly. But we just need to remind you that these two podcasts have been made possible this summer by Harry's. And Harry's are a US shaving company started around about 4 years ago. It was just two mates who were fed up with being overcharged for razors. Did a bit of research, found out that there's no real reason for razors to cost so much, so they made Harry's. And since then, they've been selling to over 3 million people in America, and they're bringing that product over to us now. By sort of ensuring the quality of shave and also controlling the entire blade making process themselves, they can pass on the savings directly to you. That starts with a little partnership with us. So if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can claim a trial set for just £2.95. And that's quite a significant saving because what you get out of that trial set would usually cost you about £11.50. So it's a pretty significant saving that you can make on this. And what you get in the trial set, just quickly, is a razor handle, five precision engineered blades with a trimmer blade as well, which I can say is really good, a shaving gel, a travel blade cover, and it all comes in a neat little box. There's been a couple of people that contacted us very kindly after the first pod. Who said that they've claimed it and they've gone there, and that's really kind of, it helps not just Harry's, but it really helps the Tottenham Way and it helps keep this content free. But a lot of people have been really impressed with how it all comes in the little tidy box and how it feels when they have a shave of it as well. So it, like I say, it helps them and it helps us. So if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, claim your trial set for £2.95, it helps everyone out. Thanks very much, guys. So Dan's made this in a pub, as far as I know. But I hope you enjoy it. There'll be a little break in the middle where I'm going to remind you very quickly about Harry's again. But for now, enjoy the pod.
Hello, welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast from New York City. I'm Dan Kilpatrick. If you're a regular listener, you may know that Tom usually presents the show, but mercifully he's not here in the USA. I'm of course here on Spurs pre-season tour, and I'm in Flannery's Bar, which is the home of New York Spurs. In fact, I'm in the basement of Flannery's Bar. It's very warm. I'm joined by Ben Pearce. Ben, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good, yeah.
You may know Ben as Ben Pearce Spurs from Twitter. You should really be following him. All the credible Spurs fans are following you, of course.
Yeah, sure. That sounds nice. We'll go with that.
Yeah. Also joined by Vince and Greg from New York City, but from Cartridge Free Captain, the Spurs blog as well.
Yeah, I used to write we had a daily kind of article called The Hoddle. I used to write that every day. I don't write it anymore, but I am of that fame.
Okay, yeah. I should say that the voice you can hear there is Vince, and the next voice you're going to hear, I hope, is Greg.
Hello, yes. No, it's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I do the podcast for Cartilage Free and write for them occasionally still, in theory. So.
No, it's good to have some real American people on the show.
Well, that's us.
Ben, we'll start with you. I mean, what on earth are you doing here in New York?
Well, Dan, when you offered to fly me out at great expense, you know, it was an opportunity I couldn't turn down. In all seriousness, I'm doing it for covering the tour for Yahoo Sport UK. I've been covering the club, obviously, for quite a long time. This is the first time I've been able to cover a pre-season tour, so very grateful to Yahoo for them funding it. Hopefully everyone's enjoying the coverage that I'm doing, that you're doing.
Goes without saying that they're enjoying my stuff.
And yeah, we're having a really good time, and this evening very much part of it as well.
Yeah, well, we will come on to covering the tour. First of all, I want to talk to Vince and Greg about basically being American Spurs fans, because I think Spurs do have quite a good following right. In the US, and we're in a whole pub that's literally dedicated to Tottenham. So above our heads, there's a bar, and you may have seen pictures of it on Twitter right. or whatever, and there's just flags right. everywhere. So, I mean, Vince, we'll start with you. How did you get into being a Spurs fan?
Well, basically, I mean, it's a long story. I'll try to keep it very short. But I was becoming like disillusioned with the NFL more and more so, and I did enjoy watching football. So I was looking for a team, but the team of like kind of like my ancestry would be very hard to follow. Like Palermo is not an easy team to follow from the United States. So I decided I would follow a Premier League team. So I just started watching Premier League matches, and basically, and I told you before, I kind of fell in love with Spurs. You know, Spurs teams of Dimitar Berbatov and Robbie Keane, and I just had a natural affinity for the club. So in 2008, I finally said, like, I'm not going to search anymore. I'm not going to think about it. Like, I'm just going to start supporting.
Your quest was over in 2008.
Yes, in 2 from 8.
Okay.
Right off the jump. So that was a pretty good initiation into it. So.
Funnily enough, that's when I started covering them as well.
It was really?
Two points from eight games was exactly the time I started.
It was
covering
a hell of a baptism.
Yeah, it was. It was quite interesting.
So literally that pre-season, presumably, you said, I'm a Spurs fan.
Yeah.
And then they started the season like that.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking back, that pre-season was amazing, and Spurs won all the games. Including beating...
And then won the cup.
Beating Roma.
5-0.
Yeah.
So maybe a defeat to Roma is can only be a good thing.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And they'd won a cup, like, you know, 8 months earlier or whatever.
Ah, so maybe you were a bit of a glory fan.
just a little bit more than I wanted. Yeah.
Greg, how about you?
So not having any context at the time, I really enjoyed the 2010 World Cup. Now I know a little bit better about that quality of football, but... I was looking to watch more soccer more of the time, and the English Premier League was sort of the natural sort of place to follow that interest. And I was sniffing around some teams, and I watched the opening game of that season, which was Spurs against City, and we absolutely battered them and didn't score a single goal because Joe Hart played the game of his life that day. And there was something about, they were really fun to watch. You know, it was really good attacking football that day. I think Gareth Bale... was really exciting to watch that day. But there's something about the fact that A, they were that attractive, and B, they couldn't manage to score a goal, which really spoke to the hopeless sports fan in me that had watched the Orioles fail for about 10 years and, you know, lots of other futile sporting endeavors. So I don't know, there's something about that that spoke to me, and then I read more about the team, and that it kept appealing to me. They weren't a traditional English Champions League team, so it didn't feel like I was picking Man United or Chelsea.
Well, that's interesting, because one thing I've heard about Spurs support in the US is that they're kind of the hipster club. Like, they're good, but they're not, like, glory hunter good.
There is a contrarian element that runs very much through Spurs fandom in the United States, or at least as I have found it.
I don't like the idea that we're, like, a hipster club, but like I can accept that there's probably some element of that. I just usually when I hear that word, I tense up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, well, no, fair enough. Both of you guys, have you been to London? Have you been to White Hart Lane, or did you go to White Hart Lane?
I went actually just this last year because it was one of those trips that I was always kind of like, oh, I'm going to make it, but I'll make it next year. Or, oh, that's kind of expensive. There's other things I could be spending it on. And this year it was like, oh, literally there is no other time for me to go to see White Hart Lane. I have to do it. So I actually wrote a post about it for Cartilage Free because it was hilarious. I looked it up and they were like insanely cheap prices. So I got this great flight. I went out really early and booked it, but actually I got pushed out by when we got dropped into Europa League. I couldn't actually watch a game at the Lane, but I did get a really great tour. So, you know, I got to see the Lane. I got to go inside of it. Actually, I saw Jermaine Jenas when like we went through and he was eating breakfast the day of the match because we got our tour the day of the match. It was kind of like a shotgun situation. But for me, that was a point in time where it really solidified that like it's okay to be American. It's okay to like, it's okay that I'm like not from here.
Who told you that?
Donald Trump, I think, let him know. It was all
my therapist told me that actually. But no, it was one of those things where like, I always felt like, you know, maybe I don't add up, but when I went there, I was like, no, I have an emotional reaction to this place. Like, we walked up the high road, and it was like, you know, a lot of people would probably laugh at that, but it was like, it was very cool for me. I really enjoyed that experience, and I got to see them play at Wembley against Ghent. So I did get to do that.
You're kind of sounding increasingly cursed.
Yeah.
So to get this clear, so you were going to go to your last game at White Hart Lane. Then because Spurs ended up in the Europa League, you ended up not seeing at White Hart Lane. Instead, exactly. You saw them against Ghent.
Right. And I even said on Twitter today, I said the last two matches I've seen them play were against Ghent and last night. So possibly two of the most like inept refereeing performances that you're ever going to see professionals have to endure. So... Yeah, I might not try to, you know, I might stay away for a couple of years, let them recover from that.
Greg, have you been to White Hart Lane?
Yeah, I've been three times, twice on one trip. I got to see them in 2011, draw against West Ham, where Michael Dawson almost scored a goal, which would have been a sight to see. That was fun. I got to explain to my girlfriend why the West Ham fans were hissing at one point. That was also very awkward. I saw them, it was Pochettino's first season with us. I saw us draw to Fiorentina, and I had a very up close, I had a very close view of somehow Roberto Soldado fouling, giving away a penalty in the other team's box, which I'm still not sure how that happened, but I got to see that one up close and personal. And then I saw us get to draw against West Ham again later, that Sunday, and that was also weird because that was the game that basically got Moussa Dembélé in Pochettino's doghouse for the rest of the season.
Sounds like you guys both need to.
Yeah, no. If we're ever in a cup final, I'm gonna stay in the United States. But it's very cool. It was White Hart Lane. It actually makes me a little sad that it's for someone who's only been there three times. Sad that it's gone because it really reminded me of some of the older baseball stadiums we have over here because it was right in the heart of a neighborhood. It was built to sort of fit the streets around it.
It was close. It was like. The stands were so close to the field.
Very tight. Yeah. The concourses are very tight, which reminds me of places like Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, Old Tiger Stadium, even Old Yankee Stadium, which as big as that place was, the concourses there for a place that held 50,000-60,000 people, the concourses were incredibly tiny there. So,
well, I mean, I hate to do the kind of who's a better fan, because I really don't like any of that chat, but there are some people that would say, we wake up 7 a.m. a lot of the time, or we're staying up until 2 a.m. or whatever to watch Spurs every single week.
Right.
Are you those kind of mental people that come here to Flannery's and start boozing at 6, 7 a.m. To watch the games?
Yeah, we've been here at 7 to watch awful draws to Chelsea, start drinking our Guinness at 7 in the morning.
I mean, there's definitely something to be said for that. It's not easy because, I know that during preseason, if I wasn't here, I probably wouldn't be staying up. And if it wasn't my job, I wouldn't maybe be staying up till 2 a.m. to watch Tottenham.
It's also an excuse to behave badly at an odd time, though.
I think that's true of all football fans.
it's an excuse to drink at 7, 8, 9 a.m. and not have to explain why. There's a football match on. And then people are like, oh, okay. And they kind of seem to accept it, where otherwise we'd be like, what's wrong? What's wrong with this person?
Well, they still think something's wrong with you, but they think it's a, why are you that interested in soccer or football, right? Not why are you drinking at 7 in the morning? I think it's a, I'm sure I've said dumb stuff about this in the past because, that is a conversation online. But, as I grow into my wizened old age, I think one thing, it's different things for different people. It's you see that level of effort in different ways on both sides of the Atlantic. On the one hand, I'm waking up obscenely early or catching a train at 6 in the morning to go watch a game. But, there are people who, in England, who are coming from miles away, staying overnight. It's everyone does different insane things for their club.
Let's talk about the tour, because that's where Ben and I are here, obviously, and it's been quite entertaining, hasn't it, Ben? Both on and off the pitch.
Yeah, no, definitely, absolutely. I think both games have been, you sometimes wonder if you're going to get a kind of glorified fitness exercise where they all run around and they tap it around, and it's, you get the fans there and they do their social media thing, and it's all great, and everyone comes and they sign autographs. But then, in terms of the actual football, actually it doesn't really matter what's happening. The job's already been done before they step out on the pitch. Everyone's paid for their tickets. It doesn't matter. We haven't had that at all. We've had two really good games, two very competitive games.
Both been quite spiky.
Yeah, the one against Roma was really feisty. And I think if that had been, a Premier League game, we would have been talking about, kind of the next time they play each other, there might be some players looking out for each other. What would be interesting is, I haven't actually looked up if it can happen, but Spurs v Roma in the Champions League. If that could happen, then that could be, it might be there's a few players who remember each other from last night. Absolutely. I think that they've been really interesting games to cover, and I've got a fair bit to talk about as well, even though the big problem for us as reporters is complete lack of new signings. Those back home, hopefully they're happy with what we're doing, but to go out on a tour, cover a team for 11 days when nothing has changed, since May, since the last time we interviewed all the same players. The challenge is to come up with things that are fresh, and to an extent we've been able to do that, I think, but I still think, yeah, there's been quite a few kind of things to talk about and a few things to analyse, despite the fact that there's, you know, kind of on the pitch, not to an extent, that not a great deal has changed.
And I think last night had a very American flavour with the national anthem, and there were hands on hearts all over the shop, and I was like, do I stand up? What do I need to do?
I was one of the last, and I was suddenly like, oh, hang on, you know.
And there was a bloke from ESPN, a really nice guy next to me, and he immediately stood up, and I was like, oh, I better follow suit here. They had very American flavour, certainly, but when it got going, it felt a little bit like a home game to me. Like, they're all the same songs. Like, it was a partisan crowd who were full Spurs, but there was like a kind of away sort of group as well who were cheering on Roma, and I thought it was a good atmosphere. It was in Orlando. We were behind the glass in the press box, so I didn't know if anyone was supporting Spurs or, or PSG.
I did ask someone last night, and they said, you know, they felt that the turnout Spurs wise has been great both times, but let's just say they were probably a little bit biased and had every reason to tell us that there was a great.
Okay, I know who you asked. What am I going to talk about? Where did you guys watch the game last night? The Roma game, that is.
We sat behind Roma's goal in the first half. Goal in the second.
Yeah, so. Spurs were attacking our end in the first half. So
lots of exciting attacks, we got to see. But it was a good view. I mean, it's a shame that, for those who don't know, New York, New Jersey Red Bulls play outside the city, and it's a haul to get over there from here.
Yeah, it's in a different state, isn't it?
Harrison, it's in Harrison, New Jersey.
Yeah. It's across the river, so it's just...
From my apartment, it's only 12 miles, but it takes like 2 hours to get there by transit.
Okay. So that I think that Londoners can probably...
Can probably relate to that, to other people, they probably think I'm sick that I would make that kind of trip over those hours, but Londoners probably understand that, so...
Okay. Yeah, Ben, you alluded to the tour there. I'm skipping back and forth a little bit, but I do want to talk about kind of what we've been doing. As you said, it has been tricky to kind of find fresh angles to come up with to talk to the players about. We've had a good conversation with Lloris, spoken to Trippier, spoken to Josh Onuma. What's been the big difference from your point of view? Because you've been covering Spurs for 9 years, between being out here and doing the normal job kind of back home. Is there anything you've noticed, anything you've particularly enjoyed or not enjoyed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've enjoyed a lot of it more than the normal season, I think. You know, we've had, really, you know, probably 10 minutes with five players, you know, at a time, and that's very unusual. We normally get, you know, probably something like 4 minutes, five to push. In the mix zone after matches, and it's all, you know, it's difficult to develop themes. It's difficult to kind of really get someone talking about something. It's, you know, and also they're either, if it's an away game, all their teammates are on the bus, you know, and then they just want to, you know, be on the bus, especially if they've lost. At a home game, their family's probably there, or they, you know, they want to rush off home, and some of them got young kids who they want to see, and that kind of thing. So to be able to ask those kind of questions, you know, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, can we really develop an idea and talk about it for a few minutes, is very difficult to do. It's been different out here. I think people maybe who've read the interviews would probably have found them more insightful, what we've been doing out here than they possibly would do during the regular season. I hope so. Anyway, I think Trippier spoke really well about, you know, his hopes.
Taking Walker's England place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, his World Cup dream. Josh Onuma, I thought that was a really, really nice interview about how he's felt after the Under-20 World Cup, how he sees himself. I think he spoke quite honestly and frankly about, you know, where he'd like to play, while at the same time obviously being very careful, you know, to be respectful as he always is. Hugo Lloris, fairly, you know, kind of probably surprisingly, you know, frank on Moussa Sissoko. So some really nice interviews, and it's felt like you've been able to get a little bit more out of them, and it's a more relaxed atmosphere, and I think that there's just less of a rush, and it's just that it used to be more like that, actually. You know, the preseason games, when I started covering them, they were Stevenage, they were Colchester, and they were a more relaxed atmosphere, and you could go out there and there wouldn't be so many reporters there. You were one of the few. I remember speaking to Jermaine Defoe on the pitch at Bournemouth, I think, when he went back there with Harry Redknapp, and again, I think that they're just a little bit more outspoken. They know that there isn't as much focus on them as there is in the season. You know, what they say doesn't matter quite so much. Yeah, and there isn't quite as much scrutiny, and actually it kind of feeds into how I feel about these tours and how that's changed, because I felt, you know, a few years ago disappointed that those occasions went and English fans were no longer able to go and get autographs with the players before the game and get up close and personal with the players. Those relaxed kind of atmospheres and games went, and they came to different countries. They were, you know, it was Australia last year, it was America this year. And when you're someone who's used to covering the club home and away and particularly enjoys doing it in pre-season, you suddenly feel like, well, hang on, you know, what about us? Having then seen the flip side of the coin here, it's really changed my perspective on, you know, for you guys, why shouldn't the team come out and visit you? You know, the amount of the, you know, you're very dedicated fans, and why shouldn't your club come and visit you? And why shouldn't you get the opportunity to get your autograph signed? So you know, seeing the bar here and seeing the way, you know, the turnout at the games, the atmosphere last night, it's very difficult to see that from the other side of the world and appreciate it.
You feel a little bit like the same in Melbourne last year.
You know, you feel like, you know, oh well, you know, it's all money spinning, and you can be quite cynical about it, and it's easy to feel that way. I think when you come out here and you see the personal side of it, and you know, have a drink with the fans, and you see them at the game, and see that they know all the songs, they really know what they're talking about. There's a Pochettino's blue and white army scarf up behind the bar, and you feel like, well, actually. You know, for 10 days a year, and you know, they might not be back for a couple of years or however, why shouldn't the fans over here get to see them?
I think
them?
This tour has been even better for that, because as we said, the football has been competitive and it's been good football and it's been entertaining. Last year in Melbourne, I saw all of those things. I spoke to some fans, and they come from like Perth, which is the other side of Australia, which is actually like about as far as Moscow is from London. So all these fans had come to see Spurs who would never normally get a chance to see them. So there was that side, but there wasn't really the competitive football side, because it was like Will Miller was playing, and the biggest name out there was, I think, Ericsson, because he was the only senior player that hadn't been at the Euros.
Yeah.
So that was a really different kind of tour, in that I saw that side, but there was nothing to write about, really, apart from the youth. Here, we're getting both sides, and I think it has been a really good tour so far. Obviously, there's one more game to come. Manchester City in Nashville. I mentioned the young players there. I think we should talk about them, because they have been a theme of the tour, because there's no new signings. It's particularly given Daniel Levy's comments yesterday. He essentially mocked the rest of the Premier League for their totally unsustainable, that's a Levy quote by the way, spending, and said, you know, we can produce our own players. Pochettino, by the way, wasn't particularly keen to talk about that at the press conference after the Roma game. He sort of said, well, I haven't heard that. But Pochettino has been reflecting that on the pitch. He's started Carter Vickers, Walker Peters and Onana in both games. Open this one to the floor. How have they done? Have they taken their chances?
I think my big takeaway from at least last night's game was they look decent for their ages in a lot of cases, Carter Vickers in particular, but like, I mean, especially against some of Roma's better players, it looked like they were struggling to sort of keep their head above water. I thought, I'm going to get his name wrong,
Giorgio.
Yeah, he was the guy I thought who was the real, like, he had the real impressive standout, where it looked like he was succeeding as opposed to just...
And he's the one you would say was more of a kind of making up the numbers kind of guy than the other three.
Yeah, and I guess if we're still considering Harry Winks youth talent, which I guess we're probably not, but I thought he looked excellent last night.
Well,
but
I think we were this time last year, but what he did... on the tour last year was make himself a first team player, and that's what these guys.
Yeah,
this was their opportunity to do that.
And I'm not sure I've seen, at least from my perspective, I thought some of these guys acquitted themselves decently, but I didn't see anybody who sort of like was grabbing first team minutes by the neck and demanding attention. And
I think Onana is an interesting case, because there's always been those like kind of rumblings that he prefers central midfield, like a more box to box role.
He said that to us.
And now, you guys came out a couple of days ago, and it was like he was like kind of admitted it. And it was like, oh, so this is really a thing, and you could see why it would suit his game, because when he kind of does get space and he can turn and start running at defenders, he causes problems. He gets fouled. But you don't always get that space. He seems to kind of like drift in and out. And if he doesn't get that space to make those turns, I don't know if he gets frustrated by that. I can't tell. But I notice him kind of drifting in and out. And I thought he was kind of quiet, and then he ended up like picking up the ball and getting a couple of nice free kicks. He drew some free kicks, but I think he's the one that's like closest to kind of the first team, where like Kyle Walker-Peters is like kind of breaking in, and Cameron Carter-Vickers is like kind of breaking in. Onuma's the one that I would really like to see make a step, but also it's like,
plus is he going to get in ahead of Dembele, Dier, Winks? Right.
And it's, you look at, I thought,
right,
like last night in particular, I mean, that was a hell of a midfield he was like playing against, and like, you know, Nanglin, and I'm sure I butchered that, sorry, and De Rossi, and I mean, Roma was playing a pretty decent midfield there, and they were really squeezing him in particular.
De Rossi actually had a pretty nasty challenge on him at one point.
Yeah, on a few players, yeah. But... I think Onuma is the guy who's closest to taking a step, and I guess I was a little disappointed we didn't see more of that last night, but I think if anyone's going to do it, it's probably him.
Yeah, no, I'd absolutely agree. Out of the three, I think the difficulty at the moment, I don't know if you do the same, Dan, but you know, you've got three youngsters. They're 19 and 20, so that's, you know, if you're 21, 22, you're still considered young. These are younger than that, and Carter-Vick is especially only 19, so he's a year younger than the other two. Now, these are pre-season games. They're good talents. They could have great careers in the game, and you don't want to criticise them overly for difficult performances against Champions League teams. You know, that's PSG and Roma, and Kyle Walker-Peters hasn't made a competitive first-team appearance for Spurs yet. He's playing against really difficult oppositions. You know, this is in at the deep end stuff. So you don't really want to get on their backs and say, oh, well, you know they'll never make it. Bloody, let's write them off. At the same time, we have to justifiably ask, do Spurs need to sign players in their positions? And, you know, it's all very well saying, oh, you know, they showed glimpses of their potential. That's fine. But then if you're the manager, do you sign players in their position, or do you not, and do you trust them? And if you trust them and you say, right, Kyle Walker-Peters has shown glimpses and he looks impressive and he's one for the future and that's great, is he your backup right back for the season? And if he is, are you prepared for the fact that if Kieran Trippier gets injured, he's going to be starting Champions League group matches, Premier League, he's going to be starting against Chelsea at Wembley in a few weeks' time? You know, from what I've seen in the last couple of games, I think he would be out of his depth. And that's just, you know, that's being honest, and that's not to say that he can't be a great player in the future. I'm saying this season, you know, Pochettino has to look at it this season and say, right, you know, could this player play in a few weeks' time against the best of England and the best of Europe if he has to and we get a couple of injuries? I don't think Carter-Vickers and Walker-Peters, if we're being honest, you know, are quite there yet. That's, you know, a year down the line they might be, but as I say, you know, that being really careful about not saying they're bad players and they're not going to make it and they cannot become Spurs players, because they could. This, at this point in time, can Pochettino trust them in the biggest games? I think not. I don't think Camp Carter-Vickers is really any further along than he was a year ago. He's very young. He was 18 last year. He's 19 now. There's endless caveats with this.
So I think we can all agree that Ben's just written off the careers of Carter-Vickers.
I'm being really, really careful not to say that.
In one fell swoop. Now, I agree with everything you said. I think of the three, Carter-Vickers does look the youngest, and I think he does look most out of his depth. And we had a conversation last night, and I will just bring it up. I'm not saying this is gospel at all, but you do realise when you're covering this tournament from a media perspective how much interest there is in Carter-Vickers over here. It's crazy. Like, every press conference has been a specific question to Pochettino, like, how did Carter-Vickers do? Like, what do you think about Carter-Vickers? In the mix zone after games, there's crazy interest in him. At every event Spurs have done that he's been there, there's been someone there from a magazine or newspaper to talk to him. And the cynic in me wonders if he's started both games, because that's quite good for the club, and actually he's unlikely to get many more starts in the next 6 months.
I think he would have started anyway, because I think these are the games where, you know, it looks like there are three young players there that Pochettino thinks these are the three who are, you know, who are most likely to be the next wave, and I need to see what they can do against the kind of opposition that we're going to be playing against in competitive games. So I think he will have learned, you know, he needed to learn about these players, he needed to see if they were ready, and then that's what he's doing, and there's still a couple of games to go. But just, you know, just to be clear on you know, kind of on what I was saying before, yeah, you know, it's very easy and popular to say, you know, Spurs have great academy players and it'd be great to see them get more first-team opportunities this season. It's very easy to say that now, but then in 2 months' time, if they are playing there and they're getting and they're up, and they're struggling, we're going to be saying just show Spurs, cause, you know, should have signed the players in the summer, and it's going to be double standards, and everyone's going to call us on it. So you've got to say right now, are these players up to it this season, or should Spurs sign players? I'm saying right now, I'd be signing centre back and a right back.
We're going to come on to transfers, I think, in the second half. Vince, did you have a point on the young players?
I was even going to say, like, you know, Pochettino's been here 3 years, he's going to his fourth year now, and it basically took him 3 years to kind of go from like talented Spurs changing the culture to like the trained killers that we kind of were last year, like putting teams away kind of once we got healthy and all that, and to expect like academy kids to come in and just be kind of like, you know, trained like finishers, like professionals. That really, it probably is very unfair to do that.
Especially because, I mean, I think we saw it last night. If we start Walker Peters in a competitive match, that kid's going to have a bullseye on his back.
Right.
And teams are going to attack him, and they're going to put him under more pressure than he's probably going to get at other levels, just by virtue of he's going to be the youngest, the most out of his depth. And
is he a better left wing back than Son? That's the big question.
I mean, he wasn't the one who gave up the penalty last night, so maybe.
I thought, you know, to be fair, and I think there are positives for you know, for those players. I think Walker Peters put in a really good tackle that she had to make.
Close to
goal. You know, I just really don't want to write these guys off. I think he's done good. You haven't done that. Good.
Before we go to a break, because Tom has told me to have a break, I'm not sure why, but we're going to have a break. Anthony Georgia, we mentioned him already, looks sort of quite fearless, promising, forced a really good save from the Roma goalkeeper at the second half.
It was a noticeable injection of pace. Right away it was like, whoa, you know, who's 42? And it was like, we went through like a couple guys of who it could have been before we're like, oh, wait, it's... Say his name.
Anthony Georgiou.
There we go.
It was him. And we were kind of like, oh, all right. And he was very direct. And he had a nice, you know, burst of pace. You know, I don't know if there's anything to get excited about, but...
Yeah, I mean, I know Eriksen came on with him, but...
Winks as well,
but it certainly... I mean, it felt like immediately there was more pressure on Roma, and it... felt like he was certainly at the center of more of it than you would expect for a guy who's like at least sitting in the stands. We had to get our phones out and look up who it was.
Another thing, I think if Kyle Walker-Peters had done that in either game, we'd be saying, actually, I tell you what, you know, genuinely, do Spurs need to sign a fullback? You know, we'd be debating it a lot more. But you know, I think he had chances to do that in the game against PSG, and he had space. He was one on one, and he just looked like. He just wants to kind of, you know, play safe, pass responsibility on, and I completely get why. But I think Giorgio showed last night. I'm not sure he's going to make a big splash, you know, this season. I think the other players have started for a reason, and Pochettino, you know, has seen more from them in training or whatever it is. But I think it does show what you can do, you know, the way you can impress and the way you can impose yourself on a game in the way that maybe the others haven't.
Agree. And I should just mention Tashan Oakley Booth as well, the first millennium baby to play for Spurs after he played against PSG. Yeah, that makes us all feel tremendously old and past it. And I thought he was relatively bright as well, but I think he's 16, 17, so I don't think we can get too carried away about that. I'm going to do what Tom says and have a break now so we can all go get a beer. But when we come back, we'll talk about Kyle Walker, snake or good lad? Kieran Trippier, and we'll do some transfer stuff as well. Okay, see you after the break.
Hey guys, so just a final call on this Harry stuff. Harry's have actually made these two podcasts possible. So if you are enjoying this podcast so far, and if you enjoyed the first one, please do help support us and support Harry's by going to harrys.com/Tottenham and claiming your trial set. Like I said at the beginning, it costs £2.95 for you to get that trial set, but what you get out of it would usually cost you £11.50. It's a significant saving, and it is really good stuff. Me and Dan have both tried it, and we both really liked it. We'll be back properly in a couple of weeks for the start of the new season. I'm sure you're all as excited as we are to find out who's starting right back for us. But for now, enjoy the second half of the pod, and we'll see you for the start of the new season. Cheers, guys.
Okay, welcome back to the basement of Flannery's Pub in New York City for the Tottenham Way Podcast USA special. We talked about the Roma game in the International Champions Cup in the first half. We should cover the PSG game in a little bit of detail, because another really entertaining match, and Spurs won 4-2. Ben, any thoughts on it? I mean, we've talked about the young players, so let's not go over them again. Dembele was impressive, for instance.
Dembele looked great. I mean, it was his, you know, you don't want to assume that he's going to be able to play that way, because last we saw of him, he was having foot surgery. So, you know, yeah, to see him playing so well again was great. I mean, again, another interesting interview the other evening where he talked about his fitness issues and said, you know, to be honest, he'll probably never be 100%. He hasn't been for quite a while. He's used to playing with an element of pain, and that'll probably kind of continue to an extent. But
he more or less said he was playing at 70% last season, which is quite a frightening thought. Yeah, exactly. He watched Dembele at times last season.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
And I should say, someone posted a video on Twitter of Dembele at Fulham that I mentioned to you.
Mm.
And it's
playing for
it's
Fulham rather
scary.
Than away against
playing,
Fulham.
No, playing for Fulham rather than away. And he's like Dembele now, but really quick.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And you just think, okay, goals is a big issue, end product, but even if he had a yard more pace, how much better would he be?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, Eriksen's goal was as a way to kind of, you know, start a new season. And, you know, yeah, Dembele looking like himself, Eriksen looking like himself straight away. And he thought, well, actually, you know, this is looking good. Key players looking, you know, immediately right back in the swing of things. And then I know we're talking about PSG rather than Roma, but I thought Kane looked very sharp against Roma as well. Very nearly scored.
I thought Kane looked sharp. I mean, he came on against PSG and immediately trapped.
Yeah,
he kind of forced Trapp into that mistake.
Yeah, he did. I just thought, you know, there are a few signs there last night that he was, you know, one game on, you know, rifle shot towards the bottom corner, kind of trademark stuff, which
caught
was
that so cleanly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you just kind of, again, looks like he's got his eye in. So, you know, we can't read too much into pre-season. All we can say is that you know, a few key players are showing the kind of, you know, qualities that we want to see from them.
What we can say, I think, is that more or less the only way Harry Kane could score more goals next year is if he started really quickly.
And stay fit.
Well, and stays fit, of course. But the last two seasons, even when he stayed fit the year before last, he had a slow start. He didn't score in 12 games or something. He scored one in 13, I think it was. Last year, it was more like one in the first six games, but he looked off the pace after
drought.
The Euros.
Droughts, massive drought.
Well, massive drought. But, I mean, it's become a kind of, it's added to his legend in a way, the fact that he has these kind of slow starts. And I think it has been exaggerated because there's so little else to criticise about him. But there will be more focus on him at the start of the season than other players, perhaps.
Possibly, yeah.
It's a good thing that.
Yeah, you know. But the big difference is that he's played summer tournaments the last 2 years, and this year he hasn't. So, I mean, he played for England in June, played those two weirdly timed, that qualifier and that friendly. But, you know, you'd kind of hope that he might be sharper and fresher this year than he has been in the previous two.
Greg?
I think when Kane goes into a goal drought at the beginning of the year, like, one of the things that's sort of strange about it is it's not like Defoe when Defoe's not scoring. Like, Kane does so much. Even when he's sort of not firing, he's still either drawing attention, making great passes to other players. It doesn't hurt us in the way that other strike, like Soldado, for instance, or Defoe, like, well, when guys aren't scoring and then just aren't doing anything else. And, I mean, Kane, I mean, and I think that's just the takeaway from this preseason mostly, is that all these guys look like, and again, it's the preseason, you know, caveat and all that, but they all look like they're picking up where they left off, and in some cases they look better, like Dembele. And it's just sort of, it's crazy to see Kane already, like, holding guys off, and, you know, Dembele playing keep away with other teams' midfielders, and it's just they're already doing it. And I know I've watched preseason games before where these guys look like, you know, not they are hungover, but, you know, they're playing a little slow, and not this year.
Yeah, I think there's been a couple of them. I think a few fans are pointing out, I think Ali was off the pace against Roma, wasn't he?
He's been lounging around California most of the summer, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But you're still getting haircuts from Londoners. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have to balance and say, you know, Dyer, I thought, looked, you know, made a couple of mistakes yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, a couple of them, not quite their best, but at the same time, you know, plenty of good performances as well.
Yeah, since you mentioned Soldado, Greg,
probably
one of the best quotes of the interviews Ben and I have done. Oh, and we weren't even in this interview, but Eriksen was talking about spending money and said, well, a few years ago, Spurs bought seven players and look how that turned out. which was a very fair point to kind of reinforce his idea that Spurs don't have to spend to succeed, which, as I said, we definitely will come on to. In that vein, The next game is Manchester City. Obviously, the big talking point, the narrative before the game is going to be Kyle Walker. Kane said last night, Ben asked him, what's it going to be like? And not the most exciting quote in the world, I think you'll agree, but he did say, you know, it's unusual.
Well, fine. I'm sorry, I didn't, you know, I'll try harder next time.
Do your job better. But he did say, you know, it is really unusual to play someone so soon after they leave a club. You know, normally, I'm reading between the lines here, but I suppose normally you have time to get used to the idea of that player at another club, and you watch them for a few weeks, see them on Match of the Day, whatever, but a fortnight after he left Spurs, Kyle Walker's going to be playing against Spurs, and it's going to be quite strange, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a little bit. Yeah, just even seeing him in a different kit. There'll be things like, you know, if he does his weird kind of like runny backwards thing before the game, which, you know, I don't know if people normally see that, because it's probably when there's an ad break just before the televised game. If he does he runs backwards really quickly in his little corner. Like whether that carries on, I presume it will do, but just seeing that in a different kit,
Pep might not allow that.
Yeah, absolutely, might be kind of, you know, that's what all your injury problems right there. That's, you know, you've got to stop doing that.
I used to actually like seeing him and Rose warming up, because they used to do it right in front of the press box at Whitehall Lane, which was right next to the dugout. And I mean, Trippier does it with Rose too, but it was never quite the same. Like, they used to do these headers, and they both can get about 10 foot off the ground. Yeah. It is really good to watch. Like, yeah, wow, yeah. You realise, without watching them in competitive action, just how athletic they are.
Yeah.
But, I mean, guys, as US fans, started supporting Spurs relatively late. Who did you see leave the club? Bale, presumably.
Saw Bale. I saw
you see more than me, Vince.
Berbatov.
Modric.
Modric. Those are like three of the biggest ones.
Keane. Yeah, multiple times.
And the last time it was like, sometimes we're loaning him out. Like, here, go to Aston Villa. Yeah.
Let's do a list piece. Who hurt the most? And where does Kyle Walker rank on that, if at all?
I would say that probably for me, I think like the hardest one was getting over like Luka. Because over time, like Spurs fans kind of like at that point had this weird insight into like what a player he was, and then there'd be like a lot of pundits almost like slagging him off, like, well, he doesn't score enough goals for me, really. And it's like, do you watch him play? Like, do you see what he does? And, you know, and it was, he was like,
he
our
was
little
literally one round into the Champions League like three years out of four.
It was like, I felt like he was our little secret, and he made that team tick in ways that, you know, other people didn't seem to understand. So like when he left, it was such a big deal, and had such a hard time replacing any of that kind of presence in the middle. Like, that one hurt. Bale, you could kind of see it coming. It was like, oh, okay, this is going to happen. It wasn't great, but at least like they didn't sell him in the league. Walker, I don't know. I feel like in the U.S., we're used to players like going for the highest dollar. Like, it's a very common thing here where like players...
He's kind of trading players more, I don't know, culturally accepted or free agency by U.S. fans.
There aren't as many... die-hard rivalries over here, just because the geographic distance is so big. Like, so, like, occasionally you'll see a guy, like, Red Sox-Yankees is probably the one that most of your listeners will have some understanding of, where that doesn't happen that often, but it will happen occasionally, and there's sort of, like, a more subdued version of what you would see in England for a player who went from one big rival to another, where there's a lot of, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, traitor, snake, that sort of thing. It's just generally not as intense, because the geography is so different over here.
And I really don't have any ill will towards Kyle Walker. I mean, when he first came and started playing for us, I remember being like really harsh on him, because he'd make a lot of stupid errors. He would like not track runners, and I would get very mad, because like I like defenders, I like defending, I like fullbacks. So I'd be like, why are you making so many mistakes? But then it started hitting me that like he's young, he's trying really hard, he's just making mistakes. So then I kind of backed off, and he became one of my favorite players. And to see the progressions he's made has been, like, in 2013, if you would say, like, Kyle Walker was going to be the most expensive defender, like, ever, you know, for 3 days or whatever, but that would not compute. Mm. So I just try to look at it, like, kind of the way I've come to look at Luka. I, like, really appreciate that I got to watch him. He obviously cared about the club. He made a financial decision, and once again, like, you know, some fans will never understand that, but I feel like it's easy to look at. He's 27?
Yeah.
Something like, you know, he only has so many good years left. Mm. He wants to earn as much as he can. I'm not going to begrudge him that.
I think it should be looked at in the same way as Bale and Modric. Yeah. You know, in that it's, you know, he's given, and he's there at the club for longer. You know, he played for them for a long time. He developed, mm-hmm. he got better there. It wasn't like, you know, after 1 year he wanted to go. You know, it's not like he joined Spurs as a stepping club, and within 1 or 2 years, you know, it's like, right, that's it, I've done it, I'm off. He was there for a long, long time. He got better, he put the work in, and now he's got the chance to make more money, and, you know, and in his eyes, you know, he's going to a more ambitious club in the same way that Bale and Modric did. The difference is that it's in England, and the difference is that he's from the north of England, and, you know, it would make some sense. We don't know. I don't know him. I don't know his family reasons. I don't know exactly, you know, why he's going up there. But it seems like there might be, you know, an element of kind of, you know, his roots are up north, and that he's more likely to want to live around Manchester than Madrid or Barcelona or anywhere like that. Whereas Bale and Modric wanted to be at Real Madrid. So the difficulty is that you're going to see him all the time. You're going to see him playing for Manchester City. He's not out of sight, out of mind. And to that extent, it maybe feels like a bit more of a betrayal. But Spurs have, you know, sold him to Manchester City. They've accepted the bid, I think from my point of view, I think it should be seen on similar lines, really.
I think there's been the thing that's been most puzzling about this to me, because it does feel a bit different, in that, unlike some of those other transfers we talked about, it doesn't feel like this is leaving us in the lurch quite as much as, say, Bale or Berbatov or Modric leaving, but I think the thing that feels different has been strange to me, and this has been going on since, I think, last year late last season, when it sort of came out that Walker was having some issues with Pochettino. Is among Spurs fans, there's been a lot of revisionism, I feel like, about Walker, and a lot of people are like, oh, well, he's actually not that good. And it's like, there was a sort of zombie idea that, like, oh, Walker's more of an athlete than a real footballer, and I don't think that's been true for a very long time, but it seems like it's been sort of resurrected in the last couple of months, and I feel like it's probably mostly Spurs fans just trying to make themselves, like, okay with this. And, like, I think, and this, I'm probably being unfair to Trippier here, but I think at the same time, I think people are giving him a little bit more, like, pretending he's a little bit better than he is. And not to say I'm skeptical he can be, but that's not to say he won't get better, especially with Pochettino, if Pochettino makes him the guy. But Spurs fans seem to be engaging in a weird revisionism with Walker that they didn't with Modric, Bale, or even Berbatov.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, but I also agree with Vince's point earlier that when I think about Kyle Walker being sold for 50 million, I've said it before on the pod, I'm kind of like, Kyle Walker? Remember when he used to always pass the ball to, like, Liverpool strikers every time we played them? So on the one hand, I think it's a good deal for Spurs, but there's definitely been a rewriting of history, as you said. People going, oh, well, actually, he was second choice right back last season anyway, when in actual fact, he was first choice right back for the whole last two seasons, and then obviously lost his place to Trippier after his head had been turned by Manchester City.
And he was injured.
The case. I mean. And I think it's easy to forget, but there was a point in both of the last two seasons, around about December, when Spurs kind of clicked into gear both years, where every single team they played were terrified of Rose and Walker. Mm-hmm. And it was less, I honestly feel like it was almost less Kane, Ali and Eriksen. Of course they were worried about those guys, but they were just thinking, how do we stop these two fullbacks bombing up the flanks and just rinsing us and getting crosses in all the time? And they were the biggest weapon. And as good as I think Trippier is and can be, it won't be the same. It won't be the kind of twin threat up the flanks without Walker.
I'm very worried about Trippier.
Let's talk about it. Why?
I'm being a little simplistic at first here, and Pochettino has adjusted the way we've played, like going to a back three and relying on different players. Like, we weren't as reliant on Dembele last year as we were the year before. But so much of our game is based on, we've got two fullbacks who can get up and attack and then get back and defend and do it very quickly on both ends. Mm. And I'm a little worried about Trippier's sort of, like, I don't think he's as technically good as Walker was towards the end, and I also think his speed, the fact that I don't think Trippier's a bad attacker, but I worry about his ability to attack and then get back, or sort of vice versa. And again, like, if we sort of change the way we play, that might not be as much of an issue, but that's a big part of how we've played ever since Pochettino got here, because, I mean, we've had, like, I don't know exactly, we might have had two of the fastest fullbacks in the world in Walker and Rose. I mean, I'm that I'm sure there's some journalists.
I kept saying that until I watched Marcelo in the Champions League semi-final, and then I was like, oh wait, actually,
that's fast.
Yeah.
I think we are going to see, you know, Trippier. He is a different type of player, but you can already see, and I think we've seen in the friendlies, there's things that Spurs do which are aimed at Trippier in mind, to get the best out of what he does. We've seen angled passes from left to right, either from Vertonghen or Alderweireld.
One of the first passes of last night.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, in that 3-4-2-1 system, angle ball out to Trippier, get out there early, and then he can try and put in an early cross. I think we're going to see quite a lot of angle balls over the top. The way penalties, but exactly the way Spurs won the penalty the other day for the handball, it's a diagonal ball out to the right and then a volleyed first time cross. I think he probably set up a couple of goals that last season with that.
I mean,
the ball hasn't even hit the ground when he crosses it.
There's no one I've seen who's better at that than Kieran Trippier, kind of hitting a cross first time into a good area.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just going to be a case of, you know, pass the ball out to his feet in the way that you used to do with Walker and say, right, go. I think it's going to be more like he gets the ball and like 20 yards further on than Walker. I think that's something the Spurs have been working on to get the best out of him. The flip side is that you then need the speed guy who's the alternative. You know, if he's getting rinsed for pace, then, you know, you need the guy you're going to bring on. You need the guy if you know, there might be an opposition that you think, well, actually, they're really susceptible to pace down that side. And, you know, that's where we go, get back to Kyle Walker Peters, and whether he can do that. But I think need to bring in a decent right back who's quick. And I don't think Walker's irreplaceable. I wrote it a couple of weeks ago. I don't think, you know, no right back could do what he does. If you can find a right back who's similarly quick, he might not be quite as quick, but if he's quick, direct, confident, that he could do what Kyle Walker does. Kyle Walker's final end product wasn't brilliant. It's not as good as Danny Rose's. It hasn't improved nearly as much as Danny Rose's. I think Spurs and especially Pochettino, if he can get that raw pace, he can mould the rest of it. He can do with that player what he's done with Danny Rose and get him much more deadly in the final third.
Well,
and
Pochettino is the fullback whisperer.
Exactly.
a way about him. Yeah. Greg, you wanted to say something.
I think you're right. I think Walker's not irreplaceable. I think he's very good, but we can replace him. But at the same time, I mean, DeAndre Yedlin didn't stick around at Spurs for a reason. And, I mean, that guy might have been faster than Walker. I mean, he's if there's one thing about his game that he has, it's his speed. I
completely forgot about it.
Exactly. Well, again, this is the American in me speaking because I'm used to him. But my point is, like, they shipped him out, and I don't think that was a coincidence because, you know, I mean, he's also not starting every game for Newcastle, but just it's going to be – I think we're going to have to change the way we play.
Weirdly, that was right after a USA tour as well, wasn't it? It was, I think, if I remember correctly.
Look, you're the one who shot down my Carter Vickers as a commercial starter.
I'll shoot it down again, happily, any time.
How about Ross Barkley, right back?
Oh, well, hold on.
you're not here to ask questions.
Well, that's a nice segue because we should talk about transfers and... See Levy's comments here in New York yesterday morning were very telling, and in fact they perhaps weren't as telling as we might think. Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair to say that.
Can I should just say what he said in case you haven't read them. The general gist of it, as I alluded to in the first half, was that he believes that is Levy that Premier League spending is unsustainable. That you can't go on spending more than you earn as a club indefinitely. So obviously he's reinforcing the model he has at Tottenham, which is you spend within your means. That's why Spurs are building a new stadium, of course, to make more money so they can spend more money. And he reinforced the idea that Spurs would rather produce players than buy players. He said we don't need to spend 20, 30 or 40 million when we can produce players from the academy who have an affinity with the club, like Harry Kane.
Yeah, I think the issue is that it's possibly more ambiguous and open to interpretation than it maybe looks on paper. It's what he's not saying. I don't think this is kind of what I think. I don't think he's saying we are not going to spend money on players because we have an academy that we like. I think he's saying if we have players who are as good as Harry Kane and Harry Winks, we then don't need to buy a £50 million striker, and we don't need to buy a £20 million midfielder because we have Harry Kane and Harry Winks. That is not to say we are not going to buy a right back because we've got Kyle Walker-Peters. It's different. It's the wrong way round. I think that's the difficulty with the quotes, and I think that's, you know, they're open to interpretation. You can read them one or two ways. One is, you know, Spurs won't spend. I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he's saying that any time you get an academy product as good as, you know, then there's been loads of them, as good as Kane, as good as Rose, as good as Winks, and if they are good enough and they can stick in that first team, that has saved us already 20 million. Not, we are not going to spend that money because we have someone who's not good enough.
Yeah, completely agree. Vince, you mentioned Ross Barkley. Ronald Koeman said this morning that he is 100% leaving Everton. Are we excited about that prospect? Are we worried about that prospect?
I'm more worried. I look at it like,
because I think it's fair to say the Spurs do quite fancy that idea.
If you look at him, he's athletic. He ticks all of the kind of like the physical traits of a Spurs player. I think last year David Luiz called us like a team of monsters, right? Just physically gifted players. But when I look at Ross Barkley with the price tag, I don't see like the footballing brain and like kind of discipline that I think has come to be a hallmark of these teams, and that worries me. That's why I kind of joke like make him a right back. You know, Pochettino's the fullback whisperer. make him a fullback because Moussa Sissoko is a talented, kind of tangible athlete, but it didn't quite come off. So I'm worried about that kind of. I'm worried about that happening again.
I think, to be frank, the thing about Sissoko is that Spurs signed him because it was a gamble. It was a gamble right. that. The true Sissoko played for France and not for Newcastle, right? Mm-hmm. And I think with every signing Spurs can make or are going to make, it is always going to be a gamble because they can't buy the ready-made players like City. And I think with Barkley, the gamble there is that you're gambling that Pochettino can improve him.
Right.
Because Pochettino is such a good coach. I mean, Ben, he's in the last year of his contract. Hypothetically speaking, I know you don't like going big on transfer rumours, but hypothetically speaking, if he was available for something like £20-25 million, he's a player that Pochettino could improve, isn't he?
I'm so split on this. I wouldn't have done this if I knew we were going to talk about Ross Barkley. I've genuinely got my head in my hands going, I did not. I don't know. I'm really, really divided.
I didn't bring him up.
No, I know you didn't. Exactly. really divided. Haven't said anything about him on Twitter because I just don't know. I think.
Stick your neck out.
Yeah, no, I will.
Live on air.
I'm going to. I've had a couple of pints. I'm going for it. I think. It all depends on, you know, its value, its price tag. I mean, you're saying Spurs can't sign a sure thing. They're going to have to take gambles. But all the price tags I'm reading suggest that they're going to be buying a gamble at the price that they could reasonably afford to pay more.
But if you consider today's market and the fact that he's got a year on his contract.
Yeah, yeah.
Then actually, it might not be such a crazy price.
No. I think he can definitely improve. I think Pochettino is very good at improving young players. The question of whether he's getting outside that window where Pochettino can get his ideas across, I think, is valid. I think he's probably versatile. I think he could probably play in a few different positions in that Spurs team. And interestingly, I think there's the question of what Spurs are going to do after Dembele and when that moment's going to come. We're all kind of, you know, we see probably Barkley as an attacking midfielder who probably wouldn't get into Spurs' front four. That might well be true. You know, is it possible that Pochettino sees him as someone who could do the kind of thing that Dembele does? You know, he's strong on the ball. If he can teach, you know, get him playing vertical passes quickly, holding off players, spinning, could he possibly do that role in the long term? I've thought for the last month maybe Onuma had kind of, you know, suggested that he might be able to do that long term. I know a lot of fans will say that's very premature, but is that possibly where Pochettino sees him more as, you know, rather than an Alien or an Eriksen, more of a Dembele, more of a kind of Dembele alternative? I don't know, but partly I don't think I've quite seen enough of him to kind of really assess how much I feel he can improve. But I think if anyone can improve a young English player, it's Pochettino. And I think if Pochettino is saying to the chairman, I've seen stuff there, if I can get hold of him, I know that I can turn him into something, you know, that into something, someone who's going to be an asset, then I think they should do it. I think really it comes down to what Pochettino thinks he can do, and if he feels he can do it and he's seen something that he likes, then I would back him. And to be honest, I'd back Pochettino in, you know, really almost everything, which makes life a bit difficult, because it's a lot. You know,
you're a fanboy.
Well, it's more like, you know, half the job is kind of, oh, you know, I wouldn't have done that, and this is why. And you go with, you know, with Pochettino, he's just right so much of the time that sometimes you have to say, well, look, you know, there's a great manager there who's, you know, he's got a proven track record with improving players. If it's coming from him and he's the one who's saying I want him, then yeah, go and get him. Absolutely.
I mean, I've written on the running order, you know, who else could be signed, but there's so few names out there who seem to be legitimately linked. I mean, I think we're all agreed that probably a new right back would be good.
Yes.
given that Walker Peters hasn't exactly proven himself in the last two games. More generally, I mean, as supporters, guys, are you kind of worried by the lack of spending, particularly given what City, who finished a place below Spurs, are doing, and what the other clubs, like Everton, who finished four places below Spurs, what they're doing as well?
Well, Everton are, I mean, they're getting Wayne Rooney. I mean, I'm not really
worried about. I mean, it's the rest of the top
done it now.
We're not talking about Wayne Rooney.
No, okay. It's not the lack of spending that sort of concerns me. It's the lack of, again, we're all, I think, from an American perspective, I think there's a little more transparency, or maybe just familiarity, I'm not sure which it is, with sort of how clubs operate in the sports over here, in terms of like how they're scouting players and what they're looking for and how they're building them up. And that's just differences in sports. But I look at Spurs and I look at the players we get linked with, and when I'm hearing £50 million for Ross Barkley, and again, maybe there is something there, maybe Pochettino just sees something he can make work there. But there's part of me where I'm just thinking, like, why don't we have sort of a better scouting network? Why aren't we, like, digging some kid up in Germany or France or even, like, in the lower divisions in England who maybe isn't quite where Ross Barkley is now, but, like, is a little more, you know, unmolded, and Pochettino can really do some work with him. Like, just more, like, I don't want to say off the wall, but off the wall choices that, like, a club with Spurs means, and a club with Spurs, like Spurs, which can't, like, I mean, you know, if it's us and Manchester United in a bidding war for, like, anybody but a youth player, like, we're going to lose. And, like, if given that that's the game we're playing, why we aren't getting these kind of weirder, more unheralded guys that teams like Dortmund, which I understand we're not going to, like, compete for Dortmund.
Yeah, you know. I think that's a very fair point.
But that's what concerns me more than the, like, I don't mind the fact that we're not spending stupid money on well-known players. Like, that's not sort of what I expect us to do. It's just that we're not making more interesting or deep dives on players, which is what I find really concerning.
I think you know, obviously Spurs would say, well, we did sign Dele Alli, we did sign Eric Dier. Yeah. You know, those are two players who, you know, I don't think anyone really knew that much about. But the flip side is, you can say, well, great, go and get another one. I'd rather have another 4.5 million one of them than a £50 million Ross Barkley, and that's fair. That if Spurs go, well, there aren't many of them. There were two or three of them, and we got two of them. Then, you know, if those players aren't out there and you're spending £4.5 million on someone who's never going to make it, then maybe, you know, maybe you just have to pay the money. But
To follow on from what Greg's saying, there was definitely links to Ademola Lookman, who won the Under-20 World Cup, now at Everton. There was definitely links to Demarai Gray.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it does seem that for so many years under Levy, Spurs had a policy of just, they were the club that went for these young players. They went for the Dawson, Huddleston, Lennon, Robinson. They picked up players from the Championship or below who were promising young and English and everyone was talking about, and they became the kind of home for them. And more often than not, it worked really well. And it feels like now's the time to return to that policy in a way, or just keep the policy going. And it doesn't seem to be in action quite as much as it was even a couple of years ago.
And I don't know if it's because we got burned by the likes of, like, Holtby and Capu, and, you know, there were enough, like, sort of busts that we were just like, all right, we're done with this. Or if it's just a matter of, you know, from what it seems like from the outside, our scouting department's going through a bit of an upheaval over the last year or two.
Yeah, well, they're saying they're restructuring the scouting department. It's not been made particularly clear to us what's happening, because there was a lot of talk that there would be a direct replacement for Paul Mitchell, which just hasn't happened yet. Although there's a new chief scout in, someone Hitchin.
Steve
Hitchin.
Yeah.
who knows? I suspect Pochettino's taken on a bit more of it, which possibly came with his switch from head coach to manager. But
which he said was completely unimportant, having previously made it clear repetitively, I'm head coach, not manager. I think what it's entirely possible. I think that Spurs are going to be the ones who finish the window strongly. That they're going to be the ones that everyone's talking about in the last few weeks. I don't know that for sure. I'm not saying that's kind of inside info or anything like that. I wouldn't be remotely surprised. I just slightly reading between the lines. Just the way Pochettino didn't really seem very keen to pick up on the idea that Spurs aren't going to sign players because they've got kids.
We should explain that it was put to him last night. Levy's comments were put to him last night, and he didn't play ball. It's fair to say. Yeah. He just kind of said, well, here's a thing where he basically cites his English as a problem when there's a question he doesn't want to answer. Yeah. So last night he was like, well, you know, sometimes it's difficult for me to understand English, so I'm not sure about that.
But I think Spurs have been playing a long game. They haven't needed to compete with some of the big clubs rich clubs. They were unable to compete with the rich clubs on transfer fees and wages and all that kind of thing, particularly the wages. They're in a position of strength, and I think they're just waiting for the prices to die down so that everyone's a bit more, so they're getting value. And then I think, you know, I'd guess three signings off the top of my head. It might well be that, you know, after, you know, a couple of months of real quietness and everyone kind of wondering what they're going to do, that actually in the last couple of weeks we see Spurs acting late as they have done many times before, and that, you know, then that's the way things go this summer. Not for sure, just that would make sense to me, that we're not going to pay these silly fees, but when, you know, when these players have got 1 year left on their contract, when it gets down to the final couple of weeks, and it's actually
like Ross Barkley,
Paul Lopez, another one. You know, he's people like that. When actually the chip's down, it's like, oh, actually we're going to lose this person, you know, in a year's time. And that's when Daniel Levy goes in and goes, right, you know, here's our next offer. It might be that kind of summer, and it might be that, you know, ideally you have them in for pre-season, ideally you have them at the start of the season. But if you're talking about a 5-10 million pound drop in players, and Spurs have already got a very competitive, very good first team and a decent squad, then you agree that's worth doing this time.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, Spurs won 11 of the final 12 league games of last season. You're talking about a team that's really difficult to improve, and anyone they're trying to sign, you're going to have to say, well, there's a very good chance you're going to be on the bench for most of the big games next year because Eric Dier plays your position, or Danny Rose plays your position, or whatever. So it is a difficult situation for Spurs to be in, I think.
I think the interesting one is that Kieran Trippier has actually shown why players should still come to Spurs. Mm. And when we spoke to him about it the other day, in that the bravery it took from him, obviously he was getting a pay rise, I'm sure as well, you know, swapping Burnley for Tottenham, but, you know, he said he knew he was coming in behind Kyle Walker, England's first choice right back, and he's been there for 2 years, and he's had to wait, and he's a lot of the time, certainly in the first half of the seasons, he hasn't had too many opportunities, but he stayed there for 2 years and he's improved. He definitely has. I think, you know, second half of last season he was probably the most improved player of the season, and now he's Tottenham's first choice right back. I think he is the example where Pochettino and Levy can say, look, you know, yes, you're coming in behind a very good player, but, you know, if you work with this manager and these players and you improve, you could be the next Kieran Trippier, and look where he's starting the season.
That's a great point. I don't want to like talk over that, but even add,
shoot
like,
it down.
Even add like Victor Wanyama to that. If you look at the pivot the year before was Dembele and Eric Dier, and we didn't have the foresight to know that, you know, all these things would happen, but he definitely forced his way in and you know, came from Southampton and really made a space for himself. Exactly the same point you're making. So,
and it's even trickier. It's even trickier if you're an attacking player, especially if you're like sort of a right attacker, like we kind of keep getting linked with guys like Mahrez, even though apparently there's nothing there, but we keep getting linked with these guys. You've got whoever's in Spurs starting 11, and also Eric Lamela might be healthy, might not be, but there's another starter sort of sitting in the medical wing ready to come in and also take minutes. But we also have four competitions we're playing in this year, Champions League minutes, League Cup, FA Cup in the league. I mean, there's going to be minutes to pass around because hopefully we're going to have to start rotating guys, and hopefully we sort of manage that a little bit better this year than we did last year.
Because you've mentioned Eric Lamella, so now I want to do a further 25 minutes on yes. Eric Lamella, who is my favourite Tottenham player. But we don't have time for that, so I think we're going to have to wrap it up. Guys, while you're here, I mean, this may sound a bit odd, but is there anything you kind of want to say or talk about?
Go ahead, Greg.
I want to steal something I read on Twitter somewhere. I apologize yes. you said this. I don't Perfect. Think Daniel Levy has ever been happier than when he spoke at the NASDAQ the other day. that must have been, like, the best moment of his life. Like, just, you know, just it felt very Daniel Levy. So that's all I want.
That's a good contribution. Vince?
That's a better point than I was going to make. So I'll let it in on that.
Okay. Guys, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it. It's been good to get a different perspective on Spurs, a different voice in the podcast as well. Ben, likewise, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Hope to get you back again during the season. We're off to Nashville tomorrow.
Yes, we are.
You excited?
Yeah, as long as like all the B&B stuff gets sorted. We've had a horrible time with flights so far. Something's gone wrong with every flight so far. Our travelling has been shocking.
Ben's been a top man on this trip because we were sharing a room in New York, or New Jersey actually, and I kicked him out. He's on a mattress in the living room.
I'm literally sleeping on a mattress in the corner of a room.
So thanks
and
very if, much,
and,
mate.
And yeah, I'll
There's
the
a bit of confusion about the Nashville Airbnb because there were kind of two rooms you could book in this place. And we weren't sure whether when you booked for two people, you were getting both rooms or one. And I've sent several messages to the woman and got the most ambiguous responses like, yes, great to have you. And yeah, look forward to seeing you, just not specifying. So every chance, Ben and I will be sharing a bed for the next three nights in the heat of Nashville. But we'll look out for Ben, who's working for Yahoo Sports UK out here, and me covering the rest of the tour. And until the next time, when we'll do a Wembley season preview and a Juve preview next week with Tom. Until then, bye for now.